The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 4th of September, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Dennis Thomas, Chief Executive Officer of Phoenix Global Mining, PGM is the ticker there, and Dennis discusses the results from the company's 2018 drilling program at the Empire Copper Mine in Idaho. Also on the podcast, I have Melissa Sturgis, Executive Director of Ananda Developments. ANA is ticker there on the Next Exchange. You can follow them on Voxo. Explains the agreement they've signed to acquire 15% of Liberty Herbal Technologies Limited, the owner and developer of HAPAC, which is a patent-pending technology for vaping medicinal cannabis. Plus, I also have on Alan Green, talking about Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. It wouldn't be Alan unless we talked about Andalas, would it, ADL. Also, European Metal Holdings, he talks about EMH, Cadence, KDNC, LPA Group, which is LPA ticker, and 1PM, which is OPM ticker. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, of course, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining. PGM is the ticker there. Dennis, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you again, Justin.
Now, we've had some results out from your drilling, your infill drilling campaign, and we'll get into that in a bit. And I'm looking through them, look quite good there, the copper and everything. So before we get into the detail, Dennis, for people listening or just tuning in for the first time, could you summarise Phoenix Global Mining, please?
Yes, Justin. Phoenix Global Mining Limited, we're basically a US-focused base and precious metal explorer and development company. We're fast-tracking the historic Empire copper, gold, silver, zinc and tungsten mine back into production by mining the upper oxide portion of the ore body with a target date of 2021 to commence production. We're also exploring the underlying and as yet hardly tested deeper underlying sulfide ore body, which historically produced high-grade copper running at between 6 and 8% run-of-mine ore grade. We're also exploring two cobalt projects in the Idaho Cobalt Belt, the Bighorn and Redcastle projects, where we're surface mapping and drill target identification at the moment, and looking to maybe drill a couple of holes later on this season. And we're also preparing to explore our Gordon Lake project, which is in the Northwest Territories of Canada. This is a high-grade exploration target for gold in an area which has historically hosted three large gold mines.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get to the Empire drilling program. And you said it identifies two significant mineralized extensions. So take us through the detail here, what's happening and what you've discovered here, Dennis.
Well, we've the program we started at the beginning of June was quite a, an aggressive program. We've had five drill rigs working up on the mountain above the little town of Mackey in central Idaho. We planned to just over 12,000 meters of drilling in the program. And it's a program of reverse circulation, what we call RC drilling, mm-hmm. From which we produce chips and analyze the chips of rock. We also are doing diamond core drilling, HQ and PQ, large diameter PQ core. And at this point, we're probably most of a good part of the way through that, over 7,000 meters has been completed. And of that, just under 5,000 metres of reverse circulation drilling and 1,500 metres of HQ core and 703 metres of PQ core, the PQ core being for metallurgical, geotechnical, hydrological purposes for, as part of our bankable feasibility study. But the interesting thing is the core that we've actually had, the drilling that we've actually been doing has been a series of both exploration holes and what we call step out holes, mm-hmm. and infill drilling, which is basically designed to upgrade our ore resources. Back in November 2017, we came up with an ore resource figure of 21 million tons, of which 9 million, just under 10 million tons was what we call inferred. Now, the inferred category of rock, we have measured, indicated, and inferred. For the purposes of our work on the bankable feasibility study, we only take into account the measured and indicated. So the infill program is a program where we look to upgrade the inferred into measured and indicated, which is drilling holes, if you like, holes between holes, and the hole spacing of the original holes were too wide to ensure that they should be in the measured and indicated. So we're reducing, basically, it's risk reduction on the holes that are required for modern ore reserve compliance. And so the infill holes have been designed to intersect ore between existing holes. This has been particularly successful, and as you can see for some of these results, they're above the grade. The average grade of the ore body, the measured and indicated average grade, was 0.52% in our November figures, and 0.41 in the inferred. We're getting grades now which are considerably above that, as you can see from the from some of the returns in the infill drill program. And those that aren't reported, quite frankly, are pretty much in line with that average grade, around about 0.5% that are not recorded. So we've got some very, very good returns, extremely good returns on the infill. Mm-hmm. But even more exciting, I believe, particularly from this round of drilling that we're doing at the moment, we're finding that the ore body is much larger than the original pit size that we have planned at the moment, the pit shell that we have. So we're discovering, for example, on our step-out drilling program, we're finding that both in all directions, in fact, to the west, to the east, and particularly to the north, and now we find to the south, that this ore body is larger than we believe. And stepping out to the west, we found an extension to the pit that we didn't realize existed. And we've stepped out to the east, where we've identified further mineralization. And as you've seen, got some quite spectacular results, you know, up to in exceeding 2%, almost 3% in some of the holes. But so in other words, that the ore body is getting larger. And also, I believe from this, this is indicating at this stage that we will not only increase the tonnage, but it looks like I'm expecting that we will increase the grade of the resource. So my confidence in this ore body, which I've always had, is getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah. So I mean, I take from that, even if someone's listening to this and not aware of what grades are good and bad, I mean, you're sounding very happy with this, and these are very decent grades, aren't they?
Yeah, extremely. You know, our resource grade, the measured and indicated at the moment we've got is 0.52%. You know, and at that we have a mine. We've never doubted that in at all. But these are reinforcing that reinforcing the thought that the grade, by the time we've finished and we produce a resource, which our next resource we think will be announced round about in November later this year. I'm expecting the tonnage to increase and also the grade to increase if these figures continue to come out like this. And this is just the oxide portion of the ore body without us even thinking about the underground sulfides. And there's always a possibility that we may get some sight of the sulfide ore body as well. But you know, that's exploration for the future. That we've already had we discussed two deep sulfide holes, which were very encouraging as well. So if you like, we know we have a mine in the oxides, and quietly confident that when we start the sulfide program, which will be our phase two after this, that will be a very exciting development.
Yeah, okay. So you described what's happening in the near term here. So looking forward, Dennis, if you give us some sort of milestones, if you could say, you know, like say 3, 6 months and 12 months, where do you hope to be?
Well, I think what we will have more results coming through. These results are probably based on about 40 holes that we've drilled. We'll be drilling probably in excess of 100 holes. I think that we'll have more results coming through as the summer. In fact, the summer's progressed already, and we're into autumn. So as the autumn progresses, we're going to get more holes results coming through. Ultimately, to produce a new resource. The interesting thing, I think, that the resource may throw up to us is that, and I'm just speculating here to a certain extent, is that the ore body may be larger than we presently have unplanned. Our PEA, in our PEA, we announced this 21 million short tons and a mining program for that. In fact, we are finding now that the ore body is bigger, so we're going to have to maybe rethink the planning of that. Metallurgically, it's interesting that I noted in my statement that the values of gold, silver, and tungsten are elevated, particularly where you've got high copper. And we maybe will do a rethink about the processing. We'll look at options. At the moment, we've got a heap leach in a fairly advanced state of planning. But to optimize this ore body, we might look at all sorts of possibilities. So I think if you like, short term, we've got our bankable feasibility study, which we will carry on into next year, but there may be a rethinking of certain, in my opinion, of certain parameters. In other words, the goalposts, I think, maybe are moving slightly with what we're finding at the moment, and it's due to the excellent work, I might add, of our Mackie team. You'll have seen in the RNS as well that Ryan McDermott has now been appointed the Chief Operating Officer of Phoenix, and he's put together an excellent team, if you like, who are near mine in terms of the open pit. They're experts in their own field, particularly skarn geology, which this ore body is a skarn, and they're looking at this and producing imaginative geology and finding new ore. That's the best way. They've looked at this and they've done a splendid job.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms, yeah, so the bankable feasibility study, yes, we're proceeding with that. Completion next year. We really, with the as I say, watching the goalposts move with regards to finding more ore is a very good position to be in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, Dennis, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of this, and the impressive results you're getting, but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think that the results, Justin, of our particularly our infill drilling program, which is designed to upgrade the inferred resource to the measured and indicated category, the results are robust, and I feel that our hope that if the results keep coming out as they are, and I've no reason to think that they won't, that it will have a very positive effect on the overall grade and tonnage, which will materially enhance the economics of the project. And that's one of the things. That we're in the second thing is that we're in the right commodities, copper, gold, tungsten, and cobalt, of course, in our Idaho Cobalt Belt exploration project. And I think the timing is right, particularly that we're in the location that we're in. I think we're in the right location at the right time.
Marvellous stuff, Ted. It's good to chat to you. And like I said, you keep me busy there, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Melissa Sturgis, Executive Director of Ananda Developments. ANA is the ticker there on NEX. Melissa, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. Good to chat again.
Now, you've got some news out. It's your sort of second investment, and we'll get into that in a bit. It's quite exciting here. So before we do, though, if someone's listening right now and I've never heard of you, explain, what is Ananda Developments all about, please, Melissa?
Well, Justin, Ananda Developments is pretty straightforward. We are an investing company and we have been created to make investments in the medicinal cannabis space specifically. So we're really giving shareholders in the UK an opportunity to get some exposure to this increasingly exciting investment sector.
Yeah, and it is, you know, quite exciting because it's changing at the moment as we speak, isn't it, around the world. And then the UK, it's undergoing some change and development. The Home Secretary has said its priorities on that. And so it is very exciting. But let's go into your specific news. So you're acquiring a strategic stake in, is it HAPAC, is that right?
Yes, the product is called HAPAC and the company is called Liberty Herbal Technologies. It's a UK-based company. We are, as you said, acquiring 15% of the company for £460,000. And the company is the 100% owner and developer of HAPAC, which you mentioned at the beginning, which is a patent-pending technology for vaping medical cannabis. Really quite exciting and very interesting. The technology is actually a small, ready-to-use filter paper sachet, like a tea bag, if you sort of in your own mind think of a tea bag style setup. And inside that goes pre-ground cannabis flower, which is specifically designed for use in dry herb vaporizers. And as everyone knows, the whole vaping and e-cigarette space is a burgeoning industry. These particular guys have a history with British American Tobacco. They have a lot of experience in developing and marketing next generation vaping technology. So they're really well placed in that space to understand the requirements of vaping cannabis. And specifically in medical cannabis, the important thing going forward is to be able to have an accurate dose and an accurate measure of cannabis that is prescribed to a patient. So what these guys have done is come up with a way of sticking a dose of cannabis inside this teabag-like device. It pops into a standard, any vaping technology that's available on the market. So it's not messy. It's, as I said, the dose can be measured. You're not looking at an oil-based vaping scenario where you've got various chemicals that you're not sure of and you've got a whole lot of ecologically unsound waste happening as a result of that. So it's really exciting. It's environmentally friendly, measured dose, not antisocial, and we think that this team is onto something really quite interesting.
Yeah.
They did some test work on their product in Seattle last year and had a very, very, very good response to it. We are investing in them now, right ahead of their, really, I suppose, official global launch in Italy, one of the up-and-coming European medical cannabis markets, and they intend to roll out in Canada next year. So, exciting investment, and I'll go on the board of the companies to make sure that we look after our investment in Liberty Herbal. And also, nicely for us, we have the ability to follow our rights and increase our stake in the company going forward as they roll out their business plan.
Yeah, and so I was going to ask that. So, you know, how and when will it be commercially available? And you're saying so, what, November in Italy is where they're starting to roll that out, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you've seen, and I'm sure, you know, everyone is starting to become more aware of how large the European cannabis market can be, actually sort of forecast to be worth about 55 billion euros by 2028. So that's only in 10 years' time. So these guys have specifically chosen the European market to commence their rollout because it is big. There is already an understanding and legalization around medical cannabis in many of the European markets. So a very logical place for them to start their rollout. And then they'll move on to Canada, where we all know we're looking at a very, very buoyant and very active growing market as well.
Yeah, so I do you know what? I was just thinking, I've obviously medical cannabis is all around and people are talking about it, but I've given no thought as to how people would, you know, receive their dose or their dosage, really. I know I've heard about medical cannabis oils and all that stuff, but I don't know how they get it into their system. So I understand this way, like you say, can be measured. So, and the alternative would be what? Just oils? Just how would they do that?
Well, if you were looking at a vaping device, the option is oil. And as I said, you know, you don't really know what the cannabis is mixed with. So it's not necessarily that good for you always. And you've got a lot of wastage around the packaging and the way that oil is delivered. You could look at grinding your own loose cannabis, but that's messy and you can't measure the dose accurately. The other way would be just to smoke cannabis in the traditional way, obviously without the psychoactive element in it, but just to get the benefit of the cannabinoids, you could smoke it. But again, that's also not socially acceptable and not and also can be quite messy. So this is really a very neat way to provide medicinal cannabis patients with a measured dose of cannabis in a way that is environmentally friendly, socially acceptable, and has been shown to work in the trials that they've conducted in other parts of the world.
Yeah, so I assume as well Italy's sort of regulatory environment is slightly advanced to ours insofar as medical cannabis, is it?
Yes, it is. They have a government, an army-run program in Italy. So yes, they are advanced. However, at this point in time, what the Liberty Herbal company will be selling over there in conjunction with the local partners is a minus 0.2% THC product. So we are right within the legal framework of everything that's happening in Italy, and actually well within any legal framework in the UK as well. So legally, when we're doing something that is absolutely well understood and well accepted, it is just the way of delivering this cannabis to the patient, which is new and very interesting to us, and something that because of what we've seen in vaping and e-cigarettes, we believe very strongly that this product that is being launched here is going to be a huge success.
Yeah, Liberty Herbal, obviously technologies founded by two well-connected guys there, aren't they, isn't it?
Yes. Look, these guys came out of British American Tobacco, so, and they've been involved in innovation and marketing. So not only do they understand how to innovate these products and how to design these products, they also understand a lot of the regulatory environment around vaping as well, which is very beneficial to rolling out a project and a product like this.
Yeah, and they also understand the power of an acronym. I didn't realise what HAPAC meant, but Herb and Paper Anti-Combustion, I thought like that. Okay.
I know.
Yeah, cool.
I know. That's what happens when you get branding experts on the case.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Melissa, one final thing to do. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of this and your company and the progress you're making but are not following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Thanks, Justin. Well, look, the space is increasingly exciting. I think everyone understands that from a global perspective. We talk about dog years. We say one year in cannabis is sort of seven regular years in any other industry. So it is growing and moving and changing and developing so quickly. So that's one reason. I hope that listeners now hear that from us, you're going to get quality deal flow. This is a very exciting, very interesting investment we're making, and it can be it has the potential to be a substantial part of our portfolio going forward. And as a team, we're moving quickly. We listed at the beginning of July, so I'm losing track of time, and the deals are rolling out, and we are seeing really nice deal flow coming to the company.
Excellent stuff, and well, that means hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much, Melissa.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
A very good morning, Just, from autumnal Seaford. How are you?
Yes. Do you know what? You can certainly sense our heating came on for the first time. It just automatically, for a long time, I mean, I think we set it at about 20 degrees or so, anything less than indoor, internal. But it came on yesterday morning. And I find the mornings are now getting that bit of a chill factor, aren't they?
Well, they are. But the problem is, we're still having some building work done, and our heating system, the new radiators, haven't actually been fitted yet. So we can't use our heating system at all. So we have noticed it getting nippy in the morning. So, but hopefully by this time next week, they'll be installed and up and running. So there won't be an issue. But
How big is the extension you haven't done? You've taken the entire length of Seaford, are you?
Oh, my word. The problem is that I thought in my wisdom I could project manage this. So I've got contractors in on day rate, and I've got an account at the builders and plumbers merchants, and I'm getting everything at trade rates. So it's actually worked out a lot cheaper because I'm an absolute skinflint. But but the problem is that the guys are coming and saying, okay, I can do it today or tomorrow, and then they come in next week instead. So it's just taken time. But you know, we're literally on the final run now. We're all secure, all watertight, and also the new extension is very, very sort of warm too. So you know,
we're okay.
Anyway, let's talk about shares.
Listen, Alan Andelas Green, I had Simon Gorringe on the podcast last week.
Yep.
And I know you've been banging the drum ever since it's gone up, it's gone down, it's gone up, gone down, it's gone down. But do you know what? I warmed to Simon a lot. And it's always hard. You've got to make a judgment on a CEO, haven't you, and stuff. But I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I quite like him. And he's got a lot of, he seems like a no-nonsense man, but, you know, hands-on. And I think he may. It's still high risk, you know. But I did take some shares, and I just think there could be some. Because listen, 2.8 million market cap. I think 2.8 million market cap. So tiny market cap, but the potential they've got there is quite big. You know, in Indonesia they've got this very clever all share deal, which no cash needed, and
of course.
Bangamas. And I was looking through the thing, looking at the best. Prospective resource figure, and I think on the barrels of oil alone is about 53 million, and there's 26, and there's gas there as well, of course, until that, but that's equivalent, of course, but and they have to sign an extension deal. It's always, we all know Indonesia is not an easy place to operate. It takes a bit of time, but I think if it gets out of way, and it seemed quite confident on the podcast, then I think there's potential there, you know. And of course there's that Badger prospect. It's quite clever. The Badger prospect in the North Sea, southern North Sea part, they are an investment in that. So they aren't a partner. So any funding needed, they don't have to put in their hands in their pockets for that. So
that's quite
clever. Yep. And they may be diluted, of course, but I mean, you know, they're a tiny company, and it's a massive prospect. And it's odd. Do you know they put out? There was a bit of contention about, they put out a sort of a bullish update or the seismic reprocessed data, and they put out I think it was 399 BCF best case perspective. And there's some consternation about this, because this, I'd look through this, it's very complex structure here. So Eagle is the company they've actually bought shares in, isn't it?
Eagle Drilling Limited is the company they bought shares in. That's correct. And of course, Simon is now an non-exec on the board of Eagle Drilling as well. So clearly, if this goes as it may well do, of course, it's pure speculation. But I think it's highly likely that Eagle will be sort of taken over by Andelas 100% at some point. But that's purely my speculation, my view. Don't take my word on it. But I think that the what's coming out of this, and there are still a lot of detractors for Randlesse out there, but what's coming out of this is that when Simon Gorringe took over from David Whitby, he said I've got a plan, and the plan is to invest into projects which are nearer term in terms of revenue potential and everything else. The Badger prospect is that, but as you rightly said just now, they've invested into that project. If there's further, there will be further funding required to bring the project online. But in many ways, the project could be compared to an I3 energy project, where they invest into a field bring in other investors to provide the funding. So Simon Gorringe and Robert Arnott between them have. That probably getting on for 80 years experience working in oil and gas. So you've got a very experienced team there. And what Simon has done straight away, he's come into Andalas and they've applied the skill sets that they have, which is in the oil and gas industry. And I think that's become very evident through the very canny investment by the company into the Bunga Mas project, which is a shares only investment, and those shares will be issued on completion. Of the acquisition of the initial participating interest, which means the company do a ton of due diligence and know what they're buying into. Equally, the history of the company has shown that that investing into Indonesia and investing into projects in Indonesia isn't an easy process. There's an awful lot of corporate governance to go through, and the government and the state petroleum energy companies move at almost glacial speed in regard to getting things done. But nonetheless, I think Andalas are now amassing a series of projects in oil and gas, and I think the Badger one is probably the nearest term in terms of turning into production and so on. But I'm just very encouraged by the progress, and also Simon, as you say, he's very understated, he's very cautious. He will, what we've seen so far, I think he says he'll do something. A couple of months later, there's an RNS out, which basically says shows that Simon is delivering all the way through. And I think it was very important that after what happened with David Whitby, and obviously a lot of investors, including myself, got burned in that process, that there was a rebuilding process. And I think Simon and the team are doing an exceptional job in that regard. I'm still invested in the company, and I see a very bright future for it. And I may well take an opportunity at some point and top up. So.
It's a lot of things are going to happen. First and foremost, like you said, that their near-term thing is the Bunga Mas field there, and if they secure that extension of the exploration period of the project sharing contract, I think it should sort of fly then, because that's, I mean, they do think, he was saying to, I said, I did say, what's the difference between this and the last sort of, strategy that Dave Whitby had? He said, well, the IPP thing was, it can earn lots of money, but it takes too much time. He said, yeah, I'm now focusing on near-term generation. This is basically, oil and gas discovery without doing the IPP wellhead sort of stuff. But look at the Eagle as well. I didn't understand that. I went on Companies House, I looked at that, and there was almost like a dormant company, Eagle. But I realised then, I checked out the board of Eagle, and they link up with Holywell. Now, if you look at Holywell, Holywell own 66.666% of that license in the North Sea there. A minority holder is Atlantic Petroleum. And so they released their interims, and they didn't mention them. Their interims up to the 30th of June. And in that, they didn't mention the seismic reprocessed data that Andalas had announced just before their interims were released. And so I thought, well, I looked through, and there was no mention post-period of anything. No mention of anything after 30th of June. And most companies do put some kind of post-period stuff in their interims and full year. There's nothing at all. That was really odd. They did mention it. They did say, we will be looking at the data in mid-August and looking at ourselves. And so I emailed the guy. They're going to email back from them saying, no, we didn't mention it because it wasn't in the period. When they actually released it, though, in August, they knew about the day. And he said, I said, so when are you going to talk about that then? He said, well, we are going to get our own people to look at that. but it won't be public knowledge. We'll talk about it with Holywell. So I think, yeah. Hang on. So they aren't going to change it. They're just going to chat about it with Holywell. So Holywell's already released the results of the reprocessed data. It's not that they're going to retract that and pull it back and change it. And if you look at Holywell, they're not a fly-by-night company. If you look at the board of Holywell, there's some
there's
big
some pretty
players.
People.
I know. There's a guy called Victor Huang, I think. He's a billionaire E&P yeah. guy. Oil and gas guy, I mean, from Asia, you know. So there's also another guy called David Biggs, also a well-known guy. So yep. they're well-connected, that Holywell Resources, who are the majority holder of that Badger Protestant or sort of 21112 license, are well-connected. So, and like I said, Andlas don't need to put their hand in their pocket for any drilling there because they're just an investor in Eagle.
Well, they don't. And this is where the experience of Simon Gorringe and Robert Arnott comes into its own because they have all these connections. They're well-connected. You know, these are senior guys in the industry. You know, investors need to understand this. Simon and Robert are senior guys in the industry with an enormous amount of credibility. And if they're looking at a project, they will bring investors in and they'll be able to sort of provide funding for those projects going forward. So that's the exciting thing about it. I think, you know, the company are just getting on with the job of developing the projects, and the latest one, obviously, the Bunga Mass investment. It's a very canny investment. You know, the shares will only be issued at the various phases, and of course they have the opportunity to own 100% of the project if they so wish in the future.
Have you seen the broken note that's come out from Optiva there? And Barney, I know Barney, he's done other stuff, and yep. he's a good guy. And he was saying at this early stage, very conservative, evaluation of their assets portfolio at 23 million US. He said this is very conservative, though. And assuming that Andlas increases its interest in Bunga Mass, this valuation should be as much as 55.2 million US. So yep. That's if you realise they're like 2.8 million at the moment, you can see. They're a house broker as well, so you can say that's quite biased, but and there's lots of risk in there. But anyway, that's enough talk about ADL. Do your own research, everyone. It's a very risky company. It's a small cap. It's they all are, you know, and the high risk, potentially high reward. But you know, don't invest anything you can't afford to lose. That's
exactly.
Yep. Mara, anything else looking at, Al?
Yeah, several other companies. We just want to mention European Metals Holdings. EMH is the epic code. This is a company in which Cadence Minerals, KDNC, also has a stake as well. And in fact, as we're speaking, there's just been a comment or an announcement by Cadence Minerals on the announcement by EMH this morning. Now, EMH, European Metals Holdings, owns the Sinovec project, which is a lithium and tin project in Czechoslovakia. Strategically, it's very well placed in regard to road, rail, and distribution hub for Europe. The Sinovec project is the inferred resource there is, or net present value, is $540 million worth of lithium carbonate. And the company said today that they had updated their preliminary feasibility study to model the production of a high value lithium hydroxide, which is the preferred method of delivery for battery companies and EV companies today. And the recoveries from the samples that they've taken from Sinovec are very strong indeed. And Keith Coughlin, the CEO this morning, basically said that the company has developed itself and moved forward with the requirements from European battery manufacturers and also the EU requirements for lithium going forward. So again, lithium. Everyone might sort of take the view and say, "Oh, well, that's very long term." Well, yes, it is. But Cadence have modelled they've modelled a scenario on European vehicle demand and sales, and there was an expected lithium shortfall in 2021. But with the pace of EV sales, particularly in Norway, where EV sales accounted for something like 45% of all vehicles, new vehicle sales in Norway this year. There's been a real upsurge and an uptake, and the this critical point where of supply and demand could well occur earlier than 2021. In fact, it could occur as early as 2020, simply because there is a requirement for a grade of quality lithium for EV vehicle batteries that is very hard to find. And obviously that's what Cadence Minerals are involved in. They have projects around the world where they're sourcing quality lithium. Sinovec is one such project, and it's exciting for EMH. We've seen, if we look at the chart for EMH over the past year, the shares have slipped away, largely in line with lithium shares in companies and funds around the world. But there's been an uptick this morning, as you'd expect on the back of the news and the update. The company's currently worth $30 million, but with that sort of net present value, $540 million, clearly. Once they get nearer to production and they get over the various hurdles, then I think we can expect to see the shares start to recover some of the former values that they were trading at late last year.
Marvelous. Was it EMH? You say, yeah.
EMH, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so again, this is a lithium story, but if you think of Sinovec, look at all the EV manufacturers in Europe. Obviously, we've got the German car manufacturers, you've got the Swedish car manufacturers, France, Spain, and so on. Sinovec is pretty well smack bang in the middle of Europe, so it's placing itself as the hub for supply for lithium for European EV manufacturers. So with the sales picking up the way they are, when we get the shortfall, it's all of a sudden companies like EMH are going to be highly priced, and it's one for the future, but the future may not be as far away as we think.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. Anything else,
Al? Yep. Company called LPA Group. Epicode is LPA. Now, I discussed this company back in the spring of this year, and the shares were sort of pushing year highs at 189p. What LPA Group do? They are a lighting company. They provide LED lighting, electrical accessories, and they supply to the commercial sector, aerospace, defense industries. Clients include Airbus, Augusta, Alstom, BAE Systems, Bombardier, Eurostar, London Underground. I mean, the list is endless. Company's enjoyed and delivered steady growth. It's worth currently worth just $14 million. It was worth $21 million when we last spoke. They announced half year figures in June. Revenues are up 28%. Operating profits up 45%. But there was a fallback in order entry on the basis of an issue with their LED lighting contracts. Historically, they'd supplied LED lighting to railway companies and train manufacturers around the world. And these LED lighting systems were what they refer to as long-term lighting systems. There's been a change, also in regard to the lighting they're supplying to the Crossrail trains, to shorter-term lighting systems. Why that is, I don't know, but that's just the economics of that particular industry. But it impacted on their order book, and clearly there was a consequential drop in the shares. But the fact is that this company, historically to that point, has been growing revenues, growing profits. That particular market has changed for them, but it's just one small corner of the market. But to see the shares drop sort of some 20, 25, 30% is, in my opinion, a bit of an oversell. I've just watched this company since the drop in the share price. It's from a charting standpoint, it's formed to a couple of higher lows, and the shares seem to be starting to rebuild nicely again. There are some changes in the board as well. The former sort of chief ops officer is going to be moved up to become CEO, a guy called Paul Curtis. And I just think with this client list that the company has, they've had a they've had a track record of a track record of success of growing profits, and you know, cautious approach by management throughout their history. And I think the drop in the share price probably is an opportunity to buy back into this stock. It also pays a dividend too, and let's not forget, at the half year stage, the dividend was increased by the dividend was increased by a couple of percent as well. So clearly management aren't concerned. They've just had to readjust their strategy, and they're doing so. But arguably the shares are oversold, and could be a nice little addition to a portfolio.
Yeah, so they had a revenue of 29%, pretty much, to 14 million, like you said, in a half year, this is. And is their market cap around the same as that, Brett? And they've also, it's not a loss, profit before tax up 1.1% to just shy of a million.
The market cap is just 14 million, so it's pretty well bang on sales. I mean, there's no upside built in there at all, and so there's an issue with contracts, and the order book fell off. But I mean, that I think is an issue that they're in the process of dealing with and addressing. So to have such a lowly valuation and still pay a dividend nearly 2.5%, I think these shares are oversold.
Marvellous. Do you own research, everyone? Okay, anything else, Al?
Yes, want to talk about a VectorVest pick which caught my eye last week. This is David Paul from VectorVest picked out. You may have noticed or listeners may have noticed in the past when we pick these companies out, they're often niche operators. And the company today we're going to talk about is 1PM PLC. The epicode is OPM. And they are an alternative finance provider to the small to the SME sector. And they provide high purchase business loans to small companies and mid-sized companies, tailoring those packages to suit requirements. They're also looking at the peer-to-peer or developing a peer-to-peer lending offering as well. The full year results are due in about a week and a half's time, but a trading update was published at the end of June, and the company said that the full year results will show a record year-on-year increase in revenues and profits, an increase in earnings per share in excess of 20%, which is no mean achievement. Revenues expected to be 75% higher, going forward, the group's sort of well placed to continue building value. A series of VectorVest metrics help flag these opportunities up, and there's a relative timing metric which is an indicator of a stock price trend moved over one. The reading for these indicators are between 0 and 2, and the VectorVest relative timing metric moved over one in June when the ahead of trading announcement. The reading today is 1.44, which is rated as excellent, and clearly the stock has moved up if you take a look at the chart. And going forward, the VectorVest has got a valuation of 67p, which is against 53p or 54p, which I think is the level today. From a charting standpoint, the actual target is a bit higher, but VectorVest combines a combination of fundamental and technical factors to arrive at the price target. But it may be early in the day to invest into this company. There are sort of several factors which David Paul identified, which for cautious investors they might want to look elsewhere. But certainly, from a timing standpoint, this stock 1PM PLC looks to be a good time to get into now. And there's upside from a charting standpoint as high as 70p.
Okay, what's the ticker there again, Ethan?
A ticket is OPM. So 1PM PLC. But again, it's a niche operator, and these niche finance operators do seem to be able to deliver. But I think a lot of people have been scared away from alternative finance companies after what happened with Provident Financial. But just because it happened to PFG doesn't mean to say that others are going to suffer too. And I think there are several good examples here, and 1PM is one such.
Absolutely. And listen, if you are listening, do your own research on every stock. This is not investment advice. I don't know how many times I say that, but we do, because every time, now and again, I still get people saying to me, you talk about stocks and, like, you know, I'm saying buy. I've never said to anyone on a podcast, buy a share. You've got to buy this stock. I've never said that ever. And if you do that, if you listen to this, you should not be investing. Full stop. You should not. If you take blind faith of someone and just say, I'm going to buy this stock because they said, they talked about it in a positive way. Yeah. Do you know what? I hold some of the stocks I talk about, I hold because I'm positive on them. That's why. But doesn't mean I'm being objective. So, I don't know. It doesn't matter what we say. We have two things at the start, a thing at the start and a thing at the end saying this is not investment advice. We say it again, but some people still, I suppose, because they listen to the podcast and just, you know, trust everything I say or whatever. But you shouldn't. You should treat me as I am, a stranger. And that's it. You know.
That's it. I mean, okay, we're talking on this podcast every week, but we have opinions and we're putting those opinions out there.
Most of them are wrong.
Most of them are wrong. We are completely mad, but at the end of the day, use this information to help you put together a complete picture of the company that you might want to invest in. You know, this isn't the be-all and end-all. We are just trying to help you, or help investors, make decisions on which companies to invest in. And, you know, if we can provide some background, and indeed, you and I, Jess, we have background and we have relationships with a lot of these companies we talk about. So, you know, what we say is worth hearing.
Well, I don't know. Speak for yourself.
Well, we think so. Maybe it's not.
Well, I think everyone does, don't they? What everyone says is worth hearing. But I mean, do you know what? Yeah. I always say that, you know, the difference between, I don't always say it, but I think the difference between an average investor, someone who loses money, and someone who makes good money is research. And I think, and anyone can do research. It takes time, but it's worth putting the time if you want to make money, because you can transform your finances by doing some research, you know, reading, and it's free. That's what I like about it, you know? It's free. RNSs are free. You can read company information. It's free. So it doesn't cost you time. So at no sort of, you know, okay, some would argue the market is skewed towards some people, like, you know, brokers and all that stuff, and all these people on the board. But, you know, as for a private investor, you can read the same stuff pretty much that anyone else can. So I think, and position yourself and risk and know about risk first. Marvellous. Al, thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak next week.
Speak this week, Jess.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Block Energy, BLOE ticker. At four, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At three, Coro Energy, CORO. At two, Predator Oil and Gas, PRD. Having a very rare dip today. Not a big dip. Doesn't do big dips very often. But having a, I mean, I tweeted yesterday, so in the last 23 sessions, it's only had 8 sessions down, and in the last 6 sessions, it's been up. And yet, so it's due a little bit of a dip, you know. So, I often say buy a down day, but it's had very little of those. And I keep people saying, it's not having any down days. But there we are, it's one a day. And do your own research, of course, not investment advice. It's very high risk. I keep saying all the time. Number one most followed company is Frontera Resources, FRR. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Optibiotics. Optibiotics signs a US pharmaceutical deal. At four, Regency Mines, sales and revenue forecasts at Met. At three, Botswana Copper Silver Project A4 Dome intersection update. Metal Tiger, put your company name in the RNS. Because you never do, ever. At two, I don't know if you're listening, but please do that. If anyone's listening to this is a, you know, Metal Tiger fan or holder, tell them they never, ever put the company title in the RNS text or notification. You can't see which company it's from. I'm just guessing it's MTR, I think. At two, Greatland Gold, high-grade gold detected in samples at Black Hills. GGP, of course, ticker there. And number one, most liked RNS, came from UK Oil and Gas, High Court Grants Interim Junction. That was, I think, yesterday afternoon, wasn't it? Okay, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.